First, the school board fired Pedro Martinez. Then they reinstated him. Just about everyone, including Nevada's First Lady Kathleen Sandoval, has called them out for doing what they did. It seems clear that the sudden firing broke the state's open meeting law. The problems are so obvious that State Assembly Minority Leader Pat Hickey has requested a bill that would change the makeup of school boards across Nevada. The bill would create seats on the board for education experts. So what can go wrong on the school board, and how do we stop them from making mistakes after we've elected the trustees? Joining us here in the studio is Jose Solario. He's a former member of the Clark County School Board and the first Latino to hold that position. Jose Solario, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be here.
So tell us, why did you decide you wanted to serve on the Clark County School Board?
It seems like such a long time ago. It was 1992. I had just finished working at the city of Las Vegas, and there had been no representation from the Latino community on the school board. And I'm a strong believer that education is important for the future of our children. And I believe that the Latino voice and Latino children should have a representative for their future as well.
So did you achieve what you wanted to when you sat on the school board?
Absolutely. We had some really good school board members, and they all really cared about children, but they didn't quite understand the Hispanic culture, the Latino culture, and I think I was able to educate and inform many of my fellow school board members about, what it takes to reach out to the Latino community.
Well, you've also criticized what the Washoe County School Board did with firing their superintendent, Pedro Martinez. Tell us what you think you would have done differently if you'd been on that school board.
Well, the Washoe County School Board does have a Latina, and Estela Gutierrez, and she happened to be in California at the time. And so had I been on that school board, and if I was out of town, I think they waited for her to actually not be at a meeting to do what they did. And it's just a travesty what they did and how they did it and how it actually impacts our children.
So why is it a travesty? Give us what mistakes that they made.
Pedro is doing such an excellent job. He has community-wide support. He implemented many changes to improve the education in Northern Nevada. And in doing so, ruffled a few feathers. And basically, the open meeting violation and how they went about it behind closed doors in firing him, and how Estela, a fellow Latina, wasn't part of that discussion, and there's no transcripts or recordings of the discussion that took place, a backroom deal to get rid of him that way, it's just unfair. It smacks of very wrongdoing on the part of the general community, especially the Latino community, because Pedro has done so much for education in general, but in particularly English language learners and Latino issues.
You said he'd ruffled the school board's feathers. What should happen if the superintendent is upsetting members of the school board? Who's really the boss there?
Well, they should have, and this is actually ironic because he had just received his annual evaluation. It came out well. Anything that should have been a problem should have been discussed then, and it should have been addressed then. But it just seems like they waited for the opportunity, as they saw it, to do what they did.
Well, you mentioned the evaluation there a second ago. What was wrong with the evaluation process?
Actually, I'm not sure there was anything wrong with it. It was pretty intensive from what I hear. They had like 500 employees interviewed. I've never heard of a superintendent being evaluated in such a manner, but it was an intensive evaluation. It came back. All concerns were brought up, discussed, and everybody thought, things were okay. And then you get a few school board members who want to act behind the scenes and do a coup and do what they did. It's just a travesty.
Also joining us on the line is Dr. Richard Mayer. He's the author of How Not to Be a Terrible School Board Member, Lessons for School Administrators and Board Members. And he is also a member of a school board himself. Rich Mayer, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Now, you're in California, but you're familiar with what happened up in Washoe County. Do you agree with what Jose just said about the evaluations process?
Taking a bit of a deeper view of this, I think the fundamental problem there has to do with just the importance of board superintendent relationships. So to me, that's the problem that exists there. Just there are a lot of tactics to try to get out of it, but I think the way people got into it was not paying enough attention to that really important issue.
All right. Well, so how should that go ideally? I mean, if the board says that the superintendent should have done X and he's doing Y, or he's moving too fast for them, how should the board and the superintendent handle that relationship?
Well, you know, I think it's very important to recognize that the school board only can hire and evaluate and fire one person, and that's the superintendent. All the other personnel decisions, you know, go through the administration. So this is the only personnel responsibility of the board, and the board should have very clear policies and procedures about especially evaluation of the superintendent, and then follow those procedures. So if there are problems, those are something that should come up in the context of the evaluation process, and there should be a very clear procedure for how to deal with them.
Also joining us now is current Clark County School Board Trustee Carolyn Edwards. Carolyn, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Now, you've worked with more than one superintendent here in Clark County since you've been in the position. What's your experience of making that relationship between the superintendent and the trustees work well?
Well, I think there has to be a level of respect both ways from the superintendent towards the board and the board towards the superintendent, and an understanding that you're not going to do anything to embarrass your superintendent or your fellow board members, that you're going to behave in a respectful and courteous manner at all times, and that you have dialogue with your superintendent about the issues that you're concerned about in private so that the superintendent is aware of concerns you may have. Those are not things that you want to air publicly necessarily unless they are not resolved, and then you bring a board agenda item to discuss them.
But what happens when matters can't be resolved or when there is real tension? You know, is it really appropriate to be having a quiet meeting on the side to resolve those issues?
Well, I think when I say a meeting with the superintendent, I'm talking about an individual meeting with the superintendent. I think a superintendent has an obligation to understand each of his or her board members and understand what their concerns are. And that's one of the ways that a superintendent can go about addressing concerns of board members without having to necessarily have an agenda item on every single concern. Because sometimes the concerns are not large concerns. They're small concerns, but concerns that need to be addressed.
Well, can you give us an example of that kind of concern that you've had to work through with the superintendent when you've been on the school board?
Sure. So when a principal in one of my schools departs suddenly, I would like to be informed about that. That's not something that needs to be publicly announced at a board meeting. It doesn't concern the other board members. But I would want to know that that has happened and what the steps are that they're going to take to replace that person, what the time frame is for that, so that if I have a constituent who calls me and says, "What's happened to my principal?" While I may not discuss what's happened to the principal, I certainly can say we're aware that the principal has left, and here are the steps that are being taken, and here's when you can expect to hear about a newly appointed principal.
And also joining us this morning is the president of the Elko County School Board, Thad Ballard. Thad, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What made you decide first to run for the school board?
Well, I have three sons who are of school age, and that was my primary motivation. But I've long been involved in community organizations and activities that I think will benefit the community at large, such as the Chamber of Commerce and the Museum Board and some other activities.
Well, since you've been on the school board, what are the big surprises that you found, the things that you hadn't expected when you first ran?
I expected that there would be so much time devoted to dealing with constituent concerns, issues that parents might bring to my attention. And although those are certainly a part of my responsibilities, that the vast majority of my time is spent trying to really understand educational issues and the operations and management of the district. Being prepared for the meetings takes hours and hours of study, not just of the agenda, but of supplemental materials and independent research to make sure that the materials that we've been provided reflect the full picture of what we're discussing.
We've already heard Carolyn Edwards talk about the way that a lot of potential conflict can be resolved quietly. Do you find that the way things work too on the Elko County School Board?
I think that there's a place for for those private discussions, bearing in mind that we're very careful to honor both the spirit and the letter of the Nevada Open Meeting Law. For instance, if you have a parent concern, those concerns can be very specific and very personal because they affect their child. And although those need to be addressed with the administration to ensure that the proper chain of command has been followed and that the policies and laws have been honored, it's not something that you necessarily want to discuss in a public meeting. But if you find that there's an issue that hasn't been resolved, it may be appropriate to make it an agenda item. But you really, in the interest of the student and the parent, you really should know that before you bring it up in a meeting.
Did you find it challenging to work with those kind of open meeting regulations and all the other kinds of state laws that school boards have to obey when you first got on the board?
I did, and I still find it somewhat frustrating in some instances. For instance, the evaluation of the superintendent, the state law requires that be conducted in an open meeting, and there's certainly a public interest in knowing the board's decision and action taking in reemploying or terminating a contract with the superintendent. But all of the discussion that leads to that decision, just as in any other personnel matter, may not be completely appropriate for a public forum. I think it's very interesting that every employee in the state has the protections of a closed personnel session except the superintendent.
So you've actually felt moments where you had to hold back because it was a public meeting, that you couldn't say everything you wanted to say?
I think wouldn't necessarily say that I hold back, because I think we address all of the issues that are appropriate and of concern. But it makes you very cautious about how you present those issues.
Jose Solaria, when you first joined the Clark County School Board, how did you prepare yourself for the job?
As soon as I was appointed, the very first meeting I had was a Saturday morning meeting, like the very next day, with Brian Cram, the superintendent. And we had about a three-hour meeting, and I needed to know firsthand from him what was going on in the school district, how we could work together to resolve issues that were important in my district. And so have that relationship was important. But, we as a school board, as a seven of us, hire and fire the superintendent. So that's our only job, per se, and as far as also policy, setting policy for the school district. What I see in Washoe County is not only do they hire and fire the superintendent, but they hire and fire their legal person and their auditor. So in a sense, they're already micromanaging, and that probably is what led to them doing what they did with Pedro, is I think they've gone too far down the road of micromanaging, and they didn't have the confidence that they should have. And maybe it's the school board members not understanding their role. Their role is to set policy and to give guidance and direction to the superintendent and let the superintendent do his job.
But isn't it always tempting to micromanage? I mean, you're going to be responsible for how the policy is implemented. People are going to come and complain to you. Isn't it always that temptation to make sure things are done the right way?
Well, when I was on the school board, it was $40 a meeting, and we have administrators that are making much more than that. It's their full-time job to implement, So, yeah, we are the public elects us. The public expects us to do our work, but at the same time, we're not expected to micromanage and handle every single decision that we have full-time people hired to do that.
So, Carolyn Edwards, what about that micromanagement question? Were you tempted? I mean, how do you think that the board should handle questions of how far down they should go in checking that policy is being implemented?
Well, I don't think I ever have been tempted to micromanage. I'm not an educator by education. I have a master's in social work. That's the nature of elected boards, is that you bring different people from different backgrounds forward who know your community and who can speak to the needs of your community and address them. And so I have not had a need to micromanage. I don't presume to know what's best in terms of achieving student achievement. We do expect student achievement to be the number one goal of our superintendent, is to raise student achievement across the board, all grades, all children. And so I have not really felt a need to micromanage, and I think it hurts the board and it hurts the district when board members do that. And but, so, you know, I'm very fortunate to be on a board that understands their higher level role.
You talked a minute ago about achievement, but surely when we see achievement flat or falling, there's a temptation to say we really need to shake this up. We need to do something different.
Well, and you can say that to the superintendent, or you can have that be part of the evaluation. So if your expectation is to raise the graduation rate and the graduation rate is dropping, you can say to the superintendent, so what are you going to do about this? How much time do you need to affect that change? And here's how much time we'll actually give you, and then we'll reevaluate. At that point, you're in a position to say, this isn't working, and we're going to have to get a new superintendent. That's the role of the board.
Dr. Rich Mayer, your book, How Not to Be a Terrible School Board Member, lays out a variety of mistakes and missteps that school board members can make. In your experience as a board member, and when you were doing the research for this book, what were the common pitfalls for school board members?
I think, you know, the issue in Washoe County is a good example of not having very well-defined idea of what the role of the board and the superintendent are. So a lot of the issues in my book, as I wrote it, I realized have to do with the superintendent, because the board and superintendent work so closely together and really should work as a team. And I think we have problems when the roles are not clear. So I think it's very important for the board and the superintendent very early on to come to an agreement on how they see each other's roles. And micromanaging is a huge problem, and I think that was a theme in a lot of the vignettes in my book, where a board member kind of just does too much, too much of a good thing.
Well, give us an example of that.
One example might be a board member who kind of runs their own survey of the district. They have some issue they're interested in. They send out a questionnaire to parents and staff, try to get input, and then bring it to the meeting and try to argue for the change they want. If there's going to be a questionnaire that the board's interested in, it probably should come from the district, not from one board member. That would be an example of maybe a little bit too much of a good thing. So somebody being a little bit too active as a board member.
Sure. I mentioned in the introduction that Nevada Assemblyman Pat Hickey wants to change the school board system in the state so that school boards would have to include a mix of elected and appointed officials. What are the advantages of having some appointed representatives on school boards?
I probably, as a local elected school board member, feeling about that is it doesn't make a lot of sense. I think local school boards are one of the great symbols of democracy in our country. It's a place where you can go and confront the people who are making the decisions. If you don't like what they're doing, you can go and tell them to their face, and you can not elect them next time. So I think school boards are a very democratic way to have community control of education.
So, Carolyn Edwards, I mean, do we have the right mix here? Should school boards really be democratic rather than expert?
I agree with everything that Richard Mayer said. I think he's absolutely right. I think the point of local school boards is for the community to have a voice in the education of their children and the way in which the district is run. And the way they hold school board members accountable is if we misbehave, if we don't do what they think we should be doing, they don't reelect us. And they shouldn't reelect us if we're misbehaving.
Jose Solario, I mean, based on what you've seen in Washoe County, would experts have helped that situation if they were on the board?
I think that a school board trustee should be accountable to the community, elected by the community. If they're appointed, they're only accountable to that person. But I'll go one step further. They may not be reelected, but they may be recalled. There'll be situations where if a trustee is not representing the interests of the community, that they can actually leave office by being recalled. And that's a possibility up in Washoe County.
But, I mean, think about this, that school board elections get typically, 10, 15, maybe 20% of people voting. How representative, how democratic is that?
The participation rate in an election has no bearing on whether or not it's representative, because everyone who wanted to have an opportunity to have a voice did have that opportunity. If someone doesn't avail themselves of that opportunity, that's not a flaw in the system. That's an error on the part of the voter not to take advantage of that God-given constitutional right to express their desires in their government.
So, Jose Solario, when you were on the school board here in Clark County, what kind of obstacles did you feel you faced to achieving what you wanted to do?
I looked at them more as challenges rather than obstacles, and I'll just bring one example up. When I was on the board, they were talking about a bond issue where 90% of the money would go towards new schools, and everybody was on board with that, but it wasn't fair, and our older schools were getting older. They needed rehab, so I led the discussion, and within a few months, we went to a 60-40 split, so an extra 30% or $270 million went to rehabbing older schools, and that was because I was there, and I was a member of the community, and I saw it from a different viewpoint and was able to speak to my fellow board members at meetings and eventually get that turned around.
Eventually, was that a long time, a difficult process, or was it relatively easy?
I think because if for the most part, we had good school board members that cared about children, and so it wasn't difficult. It was just a discussion that had to be made and one that was informing others about what is right, the right thing to do for our children.
And you obviously feel that minority voices were heard on the school board, even though you were the only Latino member?
I was the only Latino member. We also had an African-American, Dr. McMillan. So I think between he and I, we were able to add diversity to the school board to listen to the viewpoints of the entire community. So I think that, you know, that was important and it was there.
Dr. Rich Mayer, the Washoe County School Board has received a lot of criticism, and we've talked about some of that this morning. What's the takeaway from that experience? What should we learn about the way school boards operate from what happened in Washoe County?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question because I do think school board members in general are very well-meaning and they want to help kids. But sometimes we get ourselves into these terrible binds, and I think it's usually when we don't follow our own procedures. So I think there's a very well-spelled-out procedure for how to go about doing superintendent evaluations, and you kind of get in trouble when you kind of circumvent the procedure you're supposed to follow. And I also agree with the statement that it's important to treat each other with respect. If a superintendent is doing something that bothers you, I think as a school board member, it's a good idea to discuss that one-on-one with the superintendent just to see if you can resolve that personally, because it's important to have both a good personal relationship and a good relationship as a board with the superintendent.
Thad Ballard, what's the takeaway for the Elko County School Board from this episode in Washoe County?
I'm not going to criticize either the superintendent or the board for the actions they have taken, because I don't know enough about that situation to really understand it. I think the message for all of the other boards and superintendents is in the state is to make sure that you work closely together and really understand what's going on and use the tools that are in place. Strategic planning, policy setting, budget decisions, so that everybody's on the same page at the same time and you're all working toward a common goal, which is providing the best possible education for the students of the state.
And Carolyn Edwards of the Clark County School Board, is that what's happening with Clark County? Are we going to get the rule book out and make sure we know all the rules before we have another meeting?
You know, we take a look at our protocols all the time and we reevaluate, we talk about them, we do a board self-evaluation once a month to talk about, are we following our protocols? Are we following the procedures we have set in place for the way in which the board behaves and the way in which the superintendent behaves? We frequently have discussions about the role of the superintendent and the role of the board. And so I think as long as you're constantly dialoguing about that, then you are protecting yourself from making any kinds of errors. Now, you can't always make that protection, but if you're having those dialogues and you're talking about it and you're working with your superintendent and you're trying to continuously evaluate your roles and whether or not you're staying within the role that you have, I think you have the best chance of success.
I want to thank all of our guests this morning. Dr. Rich Mayer is the author of How Not to Be a Terrible School Board Member. Carolyn Edwards is a trustee at the Clark County School Board. Thad Ballard is president of the Elko County School Board. And Jose Solario, a former member of the Clark County School Board. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.